Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy it. Today's episode is part one of a two-part series of episodes on the Sage of Fort Rock, Rube Long. Part two will be on the show tomorrow. The story was first published on May 19th of 2024 under the headline Rancher Rube Long was a legendary BS artist. Here we go. The tiny town of Fort Rock, Oregon is famous for two things: the 14,000-year-old sandals found in a cave nearby, and Rube Long. It's been a while, nearly 50 years since Rube died at age 76 in the summer of 1974. But even today, among old Oregon wits and raconteurs and cowboy poets, Rube plays number two to nobody. Except maybe Hathaway Jones, the big-talking, mule-driving mailman from Rogue River Country. There's an Offbeat Oregon article about Hathaway Jones, which you can find pretty easily with a Google search. Perhaps Stuart Holbrook could have given him a run for his money, but Holbrook was a journalist, so his storytelling was constrained by a sense of duty to stick mostly to the facts. Rube had no such handicap.
"I don't lie to people exactly," he wrote in The Oregon Desert, his book that he wrote with Russ Jackman, "but it's fun to baffle them."
In that, he was hardly unique. Frontier Oregon was full of tall tale tellers.
"We always applied the rule that a foolish question rated a foolish answer," recalls Ivan Woolley, who in his youth drove a passenger stage on the rough and primitive Mount Hood Toll Road.
Liberal application of that rule led to Ivan filling gullible passengers' ears full of stories of the origin of Whiskey Crick's name.
"It got choked up with empty whiskey bottles thrown in the crick by stage drivers like me."
The reasons why the trees were all burned up in an area where a forest fire had recently raged:
"So stage line passengers can get a better view."
And the purpose of the stacks of new planks at the side of the road, which were intended to be laid down over mud bogs so cars could get through.
"To build comfort stations for the tourists."
This last line was especially juicy as Ivan fed it to a passenger who had spent the whole first half of the journey complaining about government waste, useless make-work projects, and the stupidity of public officials.
"It set him off again," Ivan recalled, "until we hit a chuck hole hard enough to jolt him into the top and a new subject."
But Ivan, and pretty much every other tall tale teller of the early 1900s in Oregon, would have been quick to admit that nobody else had quite the storytelling chops of Rube Long. They called him the Sage of Fort Rock. Like Humphrey Bogart, Rube Long was a last-century man, a child of the 19th century, born in 1898 in Lakeview. Also like Bogart, he knew and worked with lots of movie industry people and Hollywood stars, but more on that later. When Rube was two, his parents bought a big meadow in the Christmas Lake area, and the family moved onto it and built a cabin there.
"The nearest doctor was Dr. Bernard Daly at Lakeview, and it was 18 miles to the nearest neighbor," Rube recalls. "I grew up with the coyotes and jackrabbits. Some people said I was so wild I only came in for water after dark."
Back in those days, the dry side of Oregon was a very different place. Drysiders today still refer to it as cowboy country, but it's not. At least, not like it was back then. Oh, there are cattle ranchers now and cowboys working them, but when Rube was a wee lad, virtually every man in the county was in the livestock industry, whether cattle or sheep or horses. If you weren't a cowboy or a sheepman, you were either a merchant or a visitor. It's not like that today. Today's Oregon outback is alfalfa country. If you pull it up on Google Maps, you'll see it's peppered with perfect circles of green that stand out against a background of beige. Those are irrigated alfalfa fields made possible by the discovery of a huge aquifer under much of the basin and the arrival of electric service to Central Oregon in the mid-50s to run pumps. But in the early 19-aughts, alfalfa fields were far in the future. Rube grew up surrounded by cowboys, looking up to them, trying to keep up with them. He bought his first saddle when he was 7 years old, with money earned from coyote bounties and livestock trades, and used it to ride to school every day in Silver Lake, 11 miles away. By the time Rube was starting school, the high desert had already started to change, just not to alfalfa. The change came from homesteaders moving onto the range and fencing it off, displacing the open rangeland that flocks of sheep and herds of cattle had had the run of before. In Rube's youth, Outback Oregon was about the last place in the lower 48 where a person could still file a homestead claim. The rush started in 1905 and more or less ended with the entry of the U.S. into the First World War in 1917. Tempted by the promise of level, quote-unquote, fertile land in 320-acre slices, and plied with misleading pictures of pastoral paradises, young families across the country flocked to Lake County and the surrounding lands.
"With the wave of homesteaders, every week showed new shacks sprouting up in the sand," Rube wrote in the Oregon desert. "There was a lot of visiting, welcoming the newcomers. The folks would get together and compare notes. Each wanted to believe he had made a good location and wanted people to like them."
Most of them brought some startup capital so that they could build a cabin and maybe a barn. They also needed livestock and sometimes the services of a hired hand, so Rube, who from the start was a real hustler in the good sense of the word, never lacked for work opportunities. He also was already one of the best horse handlers in the country, so his services were always in demand. In the end, he was too busy to bother finishing high school. Rube was one of those rare characters blessed with a gift both for earning money and for hanging on to it. Later in his life, he used to say,
"Nothing gets a man into such hot water so quickly as good credit. Be careful not to acquire too much of it. It has ruined more people than bad credit ever did."
Anyone who's ever looked up the monthly interest payment on a large credit card balance, or getting closer to home here, taken out a Small Business Administration loan to try to prop up a failing business that he foolishly bought thinking he could turn it around, probably knows what Rube is talking about. In any case, when homesteaders ran out of money, as they inevitably did unless they were lucky enough to have an on-site source of water, Rube was one of the few folks around with enough money to buy them out. So after a while, one half section at a time, he accumulated a several thousand-acre spread, peppered with abandoned homesteaders' shacks, some of which he'd probably helped build.
"The homesteaders were beaten one by one," Rube recalls. "Those who arrived with the least stayed the longest. Those who came with money usually came without experience and hired the others. The result was the well-to-do, who came with money and no experience, left with experience and no money. The homesteaders had no chance," he added a few pages later in his book. "A homestead is supposed to be farmland, but the desert isn't farmland. Rainfall can drop to as low as 5 inches in a year, which won't raise any known crops. So they were poor, deluded persons. But they were not beaten, bitter, or downtrodden. Against all reason, they were happy. I've met dozens of them since, in all walks of life, and to a man they remember their homestead days as the happiest time of their life."
So how did Rube Long and his family manage to thrive in Central Oregon when so many homesteaders didn't? A couple things. First, their home base, the meadow that Rube's father paid cash money for before the homesteading boom broke out, had at least one reliable water source on it. And secondly, Rube knew how to hustle. Well, the homesteaders knew how to hustle too, but Rube definitely did. He was, in the idiom of the day, wide awake at all times. He was friendly and outgoing and a super hard worker and a gifted stock handler.
"My business most of my life was with horses, and there are all kinds of horse businesses," he recalls. "I tried all of them except racing. In addition, I tried sheep herding, trapping, dairying, dryland farming, surveying, dude wrangling, motion picture making, working for the government, and running a pool hall. Once in a pinch, I even trained and promoted a prize fighter."
In the late 1950s and 60s, Rube regularly led dude ranch experiences in which city folks would pay him to squire them around like real cowboys. This line of activity brought him to the attention of some of the Hollywood movie studios, who started hiring him to scout locations and furnish horses and wagons and other Wild West props for movies. Rube helped with Canyon Passage in 1946, The Indian Fighter in 1955, and The Way West in 1967. The Way West, by the way, is one of the more spectacular failures of Hollywood's history. There's an Offbeat Oregon article about the production of that movie, which you can find easily with a Google search. Along the way, he got to know Andy Devine, Susan Hayward, Kirk Douglas, Dana Andrews, Lloyd Bridges, and a number of other slightly less famous actors. He also was responsible, as much as any other single person, for the transformation of Oregon's outback from cattle and sheep rangeland into alfalfa country. As an advisor on a Bureau of Land Management board, he lobbied the Bonneville Power Administration and Federal Department of Rural Electrification to bring electrical grid connections to northern Lake County. This happened in 1955, and the first irrigated alfalfa field followed not long after, as of course did M. Penn Phillips' flashy, hucksterish development of Christmas Valley a few years later. There's an Offbeat Oregon History article on that hustle, too, which you can find with a Google search. Look for Penn Phillips Christmas Valley, Penn with two N's. And of course it was Rube who in 1938 invited legendary University of Oregon archaeologist Luther Cressman to explore a cave on his property for evidence of ancient people. And after Cressman found 14,000-year-old sandals there, donated the property along with Fort Rock itself, the extinct volcano, not the town, to the state, thereby kicking off a 50-year argument between the willfully ignorant Clovis First faction of the anthropology and archaeology community and the more intellectually flexible and open-minded rest of the profession. There's a link to the Offbeat Oregon article about Cressman that you can find with a Google search. Such an eclectic life naturally provided Rube with plenty of anecdotes to pass on and augment, as well as great opportunities to hone his storytelling style with various different kinds of audiences. And in his later years, after he'd more or less settled down at his home on the ranch and started collaborating with Oregon State University Extension agent Russ Jackman to write The Oregon Desert, he settled into what for him probably counted as semi-retirement, with a new profession as the Sage of Fort Rock. There are dozens of Rube Long stories circulating out there in the world, and in next week's column, we'll take a look at some of the most memorable of these. Key sources in this article included The Oregon Desert, a book by R.A. Long and E.R. Jackman from 1964, as well as The Well-Traveled Casket by Tom Nash, 1992, and Mount Hood or Bust, The Old Road, an article by Ivan Woolley from March 1959 in Oregon Historical Quarterly. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Say, are you an audiobook listener? And do you enjoy old pre-war pulp stories like Tarzan of the Apes and Conan the Barbarian and The Call of Cthulhu and stuff like that? Or do you like early Victorian penny dreadful fiction like Sweeney Todd and Varney the Vampire and Highwayman Dick Turpin? If so, you might enjoy the audiobooks I have out there in the world. The easiest way to find them is for the search for my name on audible.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.